Good afternoon, everybody. Just a few days ago, on Sunday, there was a devastating helicopter accident in California that tragically took the lives of 9 people. So every time there's a startling catastrophe of this kind of nature, it throws people into a sense of shock. It's everybody's worst nightmare that you'll be on a plane and have such a horrible tragedy take place. And there's an acute fear that people feel, especially when it's such young people who are killed. And one of the main individuals who was killed was 41 years old. But even aside from this person, it was young children who were involved in the crash as well. And the images of parents having to deal with the devastating loss of their own children, it's absolutely horrible. And we as human beings obviously need to empathize and sympathize and be compassionate to people who are suffering through very painful tragedy. Perhaps what makes it a little bit more complicated in this case is that how are we supposed to strike the proper balance between fittingly mourning a tragic situation, which is very appropriate as a human being, whether you know the person or not, and at the same time, do we therefore celebrate the life and legacy of the person who was killed, who does not in any way exemplify the values of what a Torah Jew represents? And this is something that I found to be a very careful tension that we need to draw, because it's a very sensitive issue in both directions. So one can never ever lose their sense of compassion and understanding and their sense of feeling of loss, but at the same time not to sway that in a direction that maybe takes away the improper message from a tragedy of this magnitude. And the reason why I mention it is because I've gotten so many messages from members of the community who talk about how much they idolize this person because of his great accomplishments and how much they looked up to him and how they're so devastated by the loss because he was such a hero in their minds. First of all, before we say anything else, there was a very long email that somebody sent me about this individual who was killed, who was a very well-known basketball player. But in the email, they wrote about the great stamina, and it's unbelievable how you can learn from a person that they never took a day off and every day was working and every day working toward a goal. I have to say, I've seen stamina like that in my own life. If you've ever spent time with a Gadol B'Yisrael, there's never a day off, and there's never a moment where they're not being an Eved Hashem. And we don't need to necessarily look to role models like that. There are plenty of places that we can find the same kind of inspiration within our own community. I'm not belittling what he may have done to accomplish the great things that he did in his world, but I'm just saying that for those who may not be privied to see Gedolei Yisrael on a daily basis, you understand that there's a tremendous amount of stamina and hasmada and a steadfastness that they always feel in every decision that they make in their own lives. So the reason why I mention this is because I think it's, for me at least, it was a tension. How do you properly make that divide between being a compassionate human being and a sensitive and caring, understanding person, while at the same time not giving our children the wrong message about role modeling and about who it is that we're supposed to be emulating? So we have a pasuk in Sefer Mishlei. It happens to be this pasuk is a very curious one. It's not clear exactly how to understand it, and the Rishonim struggle trying to really give meaning to this pasuk. So the pasuk says in Sefer Mishlei, Perek Chav Zayin, Shlomo HaMelech, Chacham Mikal Adam writes, Mitzarif LaKesef, Vikur LaZahav, V'ish Lefi Mehalalo. If you just try to translate the words, the pasuk makes absolutely no sense. Doesn't seem to be any connection between the beginning and the end, between each of these three phrases. And I did not translate it for that reason, because it's very hard to translate in one sentence exactly what it means. So let's just break it down. Mitzarif lekesef means the crucible for the silver, v'kur lezav and the furnace for the gold, v'ish lefi mehalalo, and man is tested by his praise. So some of the mefarshim explain as follows. How are we to know whether silver is authentic, real silver, or if it's something that is just a fake? If it's sterling silver, you put it in the crucible, and you will see whether or not it will survive. That is the way to test whether or not it is real. That is the way to test whether or not it is authentic. How do you know when you see something that looks like it's gold, and it may have many of the properties of gold? How is one to know if I'm not an expert? How would I really judge and determine whether or not this is gold or it's a knockoff brand? The answer is if you put it into a furnace, and you will see what the reaction is. Gold has certain properties that will react in a certain way. If something is a knockoff, it will obviously not have the same kind of reaction. So what the Navi here means to say is that when you try to figure out what is an authentic piece of silver or gold, there's a way to do that. How do we figure out what is the authentic human being? How do we figure out who a person actually is? And here is where there's a divergence of opinions. V'ish l'fi mahalalo. The same way we have a method in which we can measure gold, a method in which we can measure the authenticity of silver, that is also something that we can also use to measure human beings. And how is that? Rashi explains. Ish l'fi mahalalo means you look around. How do other people who interact with this human being portray them? How do they speak about you? How do they visualize you? Are you somebody that is a positive person in their minds? Are you somebody that has made a positive impression on your family, on your community? Are you somebody that is spoken about in a positive way? Then that means you are probably a positive person. And if not, then says Rashi, Ish l'fi mahalalo, you can probably size up the person by looking at the way individuals that are closest with them portray them or visualize them. And that, says Rashi, is the way that we can really get a picture, a glimpse of who a person is, the same way we would be able to get a glimpse of Kesef, of Zahav, by doing a certain metric, a certain method to figure out what it really is. That is the same way we can also use some kind of method to figure out how a person is in their standing in the community will say a lot about who they are. The Sefer Charedim writes a very different shot, and he says, no. Yes, we have a way of measuring gold and silver, whether or not they are authentic. But how will you measure a human being to know whether or not a human being is really worthy, whether they are really an authentic, a growing person? Says the Sefer Charedim, perhaps the way to do that is, Ish l'fi mehalalo. Look at the way the person praises HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look at the way they interact with the Ribono Shel Olam. Every day we have an opportunity to interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to touch godliness. How do we deal with that? How do we experience that? And says the Sefer Charedim, the way in which we interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the method of tefillah is the way to really see whether somebody is an authentic person or perhaps not. So I read a beautiful story from one of the Svarim that I came across a couple of months ago. I forgot which one it was already. I couldn't find it this morning. So I read a story about somebody who said that tefillah is like a chasana. So what does that mean, tefillah is like a chasana? How do you explain that? So the way he explained it was as follows. You know, you come to shul every day, and there's somebody who sits five rows in front of you. You don't have such a close connection with them, but every morning you say good morning. On the way out of shul, you wish them a nice day. The next day, when you heard that they had a meeting the day before, you ask them how it went. You have casual conversations with them. Then a couple of years go by, and every day you see them in shul, back and forth, small talk that you're making between each other, just to be nice social friends. And this person is making a simcha. So you feel that you have an obligation to go. Why not? A simcha is a nice thing to do. So how much are you going to participate in that wedding? Well, I have a very casual relationship with the person. I don't really feel close to them. I feel close enough that I should participate. So I'll go already when it's 9:30 at night, in the middle of the second dance. I'm not going to give up my whole night, and I'm not going to get a babysitter for my kids, and I'm not going to go change around my whole schedule to leave work early to be there for the early part of the wedding. So I'll go 9:30 at night when it's already late, when the wedding is winding down. I show up at the wedding. I dance a little bit for 2 minutes. I sit down. I talk to some friends, and I leave. I'm there for 10, 15 minutes, and that's the whole experience. What if it's somebody that I learned in yeshiva with, and then we both got married at the same time, and then we moved to the same community, and we're raising our children together, and they went through school together, and then as we watch our children develop, now he makes a simcha, and he invites me to the simcha. So we've been friends for a long time. Obviously, it would be embarrassing to him, and to me, and to our relationship, if I showed up for 2 minutes, danced with him, and walked out of the wedding. That wouldn't be a respectful thing to do. So I have to go home, take a shower, I have to get ready a little bit earlier, maybe I have to come home a little bit early from work. Yes, I need to get the babysitter, and yes, I'm going to go to sleep later than I wanted to, but all of that is part of a meaningful relationship. What would happen if you are the mechutin? You are the one who is the mechutin of this person who's making the wedding, meaning two sides are necessary to make a wedding happen. So the mechutanim have to show up 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when the wedding is only going to be at 6 or 7 at night. Why? Because I'm the mechutin. The caterer walks in and says, what are you doing here? Why are you here so early? The wedding doesn't start for another 5 hours. We're not ready. The answer is, I'm the mechutin. I'm making the wedding. Of course I need to be here. So that's the way they explain Ish l'fi mahalala. Dependent on how you view yourself in your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the way that you're going to approach your entire experience of tefillah. You want to measure up a person? Do I show up for 2 minutes to davening, and while something's going on, I have a phone in my pocket that's buzzing the whole time, and I pick it up, I look at it, I see what's going on, what's not going on, I pick it up sometimes, and I say, I'm not available right now, I'm in the middle of Shemona Esrei, I'm in the middle of Kriya Shema, I'm in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz, I'll call you back soon. That shows you just have a casual relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and davening doesn't really mean that much to you. If davening was so important, if that's really who you are, like David HaMelech says, Ani Tefillah, it defines who I am, it's so much a part of my existence, when I have the opportunity to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a very personal way every single day of my life, when that is the objective that I have, the Gemara says, Chasidim HaYishonim, HaYishon Shah Achas Kodem HaTefillah. The Chasidim HaRishonim, the great giants, used to come an hour before davening. What were they doing there so early? So some say they had to sit and clear their minds, meditation. But perhaps it means, if it's something that I feel I'm a mechutin, it's something I feel I am the Baal Simcha, of course I need to be there early. I need to make the hachana, I need to make sure everything's set up properly, I need to make sure I have a seat where I'm comfortable, I know what I'm doing, I know what I'm about to daven for, I prepare my head. And that is something that the Sefer Chayredim writes, perhaps is the understanding in this pasuk, ish lefi mahalalo, man can be evaluated by the way they approach tefillah, by the way that they approach the opportunity to relate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But finally, what's important for our discussion is the way Rabbeinu Yonah, the great Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, explains in the Shari Tshuva, what does this pasuk mean, v'ish lefi mahalalo? And he explains so beautifully, it's not exactly what I would have thought, but he says so beautifully, and it's a very important message, especially for what we started with. Rabbeinu Yonah writes, yes, we have a method to measure whether or not silver is authentic by putting it into an instrument. We have a way to measure whether or not gold is real, whether or not it's going to survive the experience of being put through a fire. How do we know the authentic human being, says Rabbeinu Yonah, it's ish lefi mahalalo. Look at what the person praises. Look at what their role models are. Look at what they put on a pedestal, and then you will have a very clear picture of what that person is all about. What do they value in life? What is important to them? What do they talk to their children about around the dinner table? And that is something to know what a person is really about. They can put on a show for the whole world, but these very small details that they give over when they talk about things that are valuable to them in their lives are so much a part of who they really are and really define the core essence of who the human being is. And therefore, says Rabbeinu Yonah, one needs to be so careful. If ish lefi mahalalo, if the way that we evaluate the character of a person is based on what it is that they choose to focus on, what it is that they choose to value in their lives, then it's important for us to choose the right role models and to talk about the right kinds of people. The Pachad Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, writes about this Rabbeinu Yonah, and he says that sometimes you will find a person who spends his life learning Torah, and who's sitting and really toiling over Talmud Torah and becoming a great Talmud Chacham. But he says, you'll notice that when a very wealthy person walks into the room, all of a sudden their whole atmosphere changes, and they stand up for them, and they have so much kavod and so much mora, and they get so thrown off by that experience because it's very important to them in their lives. And he says that's one kind of individual. You have another individual who is not able to learn so much. He's doing something else. He's making a parnasa, as he should, and he's doing whatever he's supposed to be doing. But he says he has a tremendous value and respect for Talmid HaChachamim. When a wealthy person walks into the room, it doesn't make a difference to him. You give the same respect that we give to anybody else. When a Talmud Chacham walks into the room, he shows his children, this is the way we respect the Talmud Chacham, this is the way I find value and meaning in life, is with a person like this. Says the Pachad Yitzchak, if you don't understand the value system that the Torah expects of us, it doesn't matter how much Torah you have learned, you are so far from an understanding of what the Torah is supposed to represent for us. And the person could have amassed tremendous Torah knowledge, and they could be a great Torah scholar, but all of that, says the Pachad Yitzchak, based off of this Rabbeinu Yonah, ish lefi mahalalo, our children will pick up on those messages of what we value. Do we value money? Do we value only somebody who's wealthy? Does that change our perspective? Does that change our atmosphere? Or do we value somebody who has given so much for Talmud Torah, who has given so much to become the great Talmud Chacham that they are on their own? That, says Rav Huttner, is what you can take away from this Rabbeinu Yonah. Ish lefi mahalalo. We need to be so careful about who we choose to be those role models, who we choose to talk to our children about, and how we talk about such people. There's an amazing letter. It's a little bit of a painful letter, but one of the great opponents to Rav Kook at the time was Rav Elchanan Wasserman. And Rav Elchanan was a great Talmud of, as we know, he was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and he was one of the very important voices in the European world of Rabbanus. And Rabbi Elchanan was very opposed to Rav Kook. And the reason why was not because he had any personal vendetta against Rav Kook, but ideologically he believed that Rav Kook was wrong. And one of the things he writes in a letter happens to be Rabbi Elchanan misunderstood something. He didn't realize that there was a difference between Keren HaYisod and Keren Kayemet, two different organizations. He made a mistake. Okay, it's not important. But basically he writes, the primary reason that I feel I have a problem with supporting the initiatives of Rav Kook is because he said Rav Kook stands behind this Keren HaYisod, which was not fully accurate. Again, it's not Rabbi Elchanan's fault. How is he supposed to know that? And he was writing a private letter to someone, and he says that Ish Lefi Mahalalo, he quotes this Rabbeinu Yonah, and he writes that if this is what Rav Kook feels is something worthy of his praise, if this is what Rav Kook feels is something worthy of his consideration and something that he values, then it means that I'm so far away from what Rav Kook represents, and I cannot stand behind him. Not because I have any personal issue with him. He's a great Talmud Chacham, a great Tzaddik. But Ish Lefi Mahalalo, it says so much about a person, what they choose to focus on, what they choose to value, and what they choose to speak about when they interact with other people. And therefore, I believe it's a very important idea that Rabbeinu Yonah shares, especially with the Tosefos, with the addition of Rav Huttner and the Pachad Yitzchak. It's something to consider, it's something to think about, who those role models are, who we choose to talk about, who we choose to think about, and who we choose around the dinner table when our children are with us, who we choose to have discussions about, and who we show are the great values of what the Jewish people are all about and really represent.